everybody, welcome to another episode of the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Today I'm joined by my usual co-host, Andrew Moran. How you doing, buddy? You good?
I am good. It's been a while since we've actually been on the start of a podcast together because things haven't aligned properly, but you know, it is what it is.
Keep missing each other, new jobs and everything else, summer, holidays. I've been in Florida and last episode I was in London, so just a bit all over the place at the moment, but hopefully we can start to calm down and get back into this swing of things. But today we are introduced by we should have asked how to say the name properly beforehand. So Brittany Sailor, is it? I've probably butchered the name for once.
So Brit Sailor, yeah, you got it.
Wow. Normally Andrew's the one who butchers names, and we always ask before the podcast how to say it properly, and most of our familiar guests and listeners will know that Andrew can't say names properly. So how are you doing? You good?
Yeah, I'm really good. Unfortunately, not kind of globetrotting like you, John. But yeah, I'm really, really good. Thank you. Enjoying the sunshine massively. Although I am suffering really badly from allergies. And so if I have to cough, I'm sorry, I apologize. But yeah, it's kind of the catch 22 with summer for me. I love summer so much, but I get sick every time. So yeah, unfortunately.
My wife's in a similar boat, but everyone's saying it's hot. I've had like two weeks of like 35 degrees, so this is like literally nothing. Everyone, like my father, and so for context listeners, it's just when we've just had the weekend of the probably only weekend of the summer, if you get what I mean. We've just had what one weekend of like of top like 20 temperature in the UK, so everyone's moaning about it being too hot after spending the first 5 months of this year moaning about it being too cold. So, you know.
Typical Brits, that's what it is.
Yeah. So my father-in-law was like, oh, all I've been doing is saying how cold it's been for like 5 months. Now it's too hot. I'm like, it's 27. This ain't hot. Like, try spending 35 degrees in like a Magic Kingdom of like...
that's like 100% hot. And like 100% humidity as well. So
exactly. That's hot. Yeah. This is nice and cool. This is good weather. Good one to come back to. Anyway, us Brits love to talk about weather and stuff, but let's get on to today's subject, which is you. So Brit, can you just give us a bit of a summary about what you're doing at the moment and what you're doing at Avanade, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, thanks for having me on as well. I didn't really say that at the top, but thank you very much. As John mentioned, so I work at Avanade. It is a Microsoft partner, and how I really kind of like to describe Avanade is that it's a bit of a love child between Accenture and Microsoft. So it's partially owned. I think the distribution has changed a little bit. It's not exactly 50-50, but it is an organization that is owned partly by Accenture and Avanade. I would say what makes us unique is the fact that we focus mostly on the Microsoft technology stack. So all the way from kind of workplace through to the Azure cloud. So it is an entire Microsoft technology stack focus. We do also have a strategy arm as well. We work with a number of partners also, but we have a strategy arm that I sit within. So I sit within an area that we call digital advisory, focusing on technology strategy, but I specifically actually focus on sustainability these days. So I focus on driving sustainable outcomes through technology, whether that's being able to kind of measure the impact of your technology usage, or whether it's how do we deliver sustainability objectives through technology with things like reporting or leveraging AI to identify biodiversity. It's actually a really kind of cool span of work that I get to be involved in. So it's kind of what I'm doing right now.
You know what? We've just been moaning. Sorry, just moaning about weather, and I've just heard thunder, like literally.
Oh right, my laundry's
that's
out.
The thing I'm waiting for the minute. I'm literally waiting for the thunder to roll in. I think it rolls in up here about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then don't finish till about 7, which is when I run my football training. So I'm like, I'm waiting for it to basically start kicking off, and I go, yeah, training's cancelled. I can then stay in the house, not have to go out.
Oh, there's a big thunderstorm. It's not coming till 3 o'clock, and then it's stopping off the rest of the day. That was quite loud. Anyway, so do you work with Zoe Wilson at all?
I do not know. No, I don't know Zoe.
I thought Zoe worked in that side of things as well, but Possibly not.
Zoe Wilson.
Yeah, she's a guest that's been on this podcast, one of John's friends.
No, I don't know. Quite a lot. Zoe. It looks...
I say there's quite a few people now who know that have actually been on this podcast.
Is there? All right.
Yeah, Tracy Sinclair.
I think you're probably the fifth now.
Yeah. I know the name Tracy, but I'm also new.
Oh, sorry. So... I said Tracy and John.
Oh, done it again. Done it again. He said her name like wrong on the podcast, and now he's saying it. Like, now he's saying it.
No, it's just gonna stick, isn't it? That's the problem. It is gonna stick.
Probably the fifth now, aren't you? I think we've had Zoe. We've had Trisha, maybe.
Jesse.
And then we've had another one as well. Is it Angelica is there, isn't she?
Yes.
That name sounds familiar.
She's just been awarded MVP at the beginning of June.
Go on, John, tell us her name because I'm not going to even try.
Oh, yes, of BizApps. Yeah, we had a celebration. I think her name's Angeliki. I think she got an MVP business applications certification. I heard it. Yeah, we had
Angeliki Passage View, something like that.
Yeah.
I think I got it right. Pants.
we've had a few and obviously Andrew's not been able to say probably any of their names.
I can be the first. There you go. First.
I noticed you have the orange nail varnish as well to match the Avanar's Go Orange, eh?
Yeah, I really like to stay on brand. That is exactly why, because I have some client facing work and I just like to really be on brand. So that is why. It has nothing to do with it being summer. It's just Avanade, 360 degree in my life is Avanade.
Well, that's dedication. Anyway, let's go back through the career, kind of how you got to where you are today. And I like to go and ask kind of like, what did you want to kind of be when you was at school? What was like the goal, the career for you?
I wish the answer was as like straightforward, but I'm going to talk a little bit because it really wasn't for me. All I wanted to do was travel. I didn't really have, so I played sport in school, a lot of sport, and that kept me really kind of on the straight and narrow. I was quite dedicated at a very high level. And so I didn't actually have a lot of opportunity to explore things outside of that. I got to university in America on a scholarship. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but in my first year, I excelled quite a bit in history. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll go into academia. So I studied history in university, but really my passion, what I wanted to do was travel. And I would kind of do anything to be able to travel. So what I did right out of university is I taught English abroad in South Korea. So I spent a few years there. So yeah, I guess as far as that question goes, it wasn't necessarily technology. It was to travel, explore the world, and help people. I knew I wanted to help people in some way or another, but I didn't actually know how. I always used to say the Peace Corps, but then I realized I had a lot of student debt I had to pay for, and they don't really know this. It's not a big pay going into the Peace Corps, but that's essentially what I wanted to do. So it wasn't really anything to do in tech.
So whereabouts are you originally from?
I am from a state in the U.S. called Indiana. So it's in the Midwest, kind of by Chicago and Detroit.
Oh, wow. I was trying to place the accent, and then I was trying to look through career history in LinkedIn as well. And it just took me all over the world. So I thought,
this is it. Yeah. No, and I have a very straight, my accent as well is very, when I call home, my parents are like, do you think you're the queen? Why are you talking like that? But here people think I sound very American. So.
I don't know, you don't sound very, very American, in all honesty. Yeah. Like, that's why I was just trying to figure out where the accent was from.
I haven't lived there for 13 years. It's so bizarre to say that, but it's been a while since I left.
Oh, wow. So then, where did kind of IT come into it then?
Yeah, so I decided from Korea, I decided to move to New Zealand, as one does. I just, I met people in Korea that lived in New Zealand, so I just decided to move there. And while I was there, I wanted to get what kind of I was calling a proper job, because at the time I had just started working in a bar, but I wanted to start my career because I was a bit late compared to my peers, I think. And I got a job teaching people how to use software. And that's essentially how, because I had a teaching background, I was pretty, you know, analytical. I can learn really quickly. And so I was teaching people how to use a certain software. And then from there, I became a business analyst around that particular software, helping them develop and progress it. And I got hired into, do you remember Yellow Pages? Do you remember that organization?
Yeah, Yellow Pages.
Yeah, well, they were going through a digitization in New Zealand. And so I helped them kind of transform that organization to a digital company. That's essentially how I started my way in tech. I put myself through some certifications in testing, so software testing, because that was kind of the space that they need me in. And yeah, I kind of really started as a software tester and business analyst.
Awesome. So you have like literally traveled around. So looking at your career history, obviously, you say going from New Zealand, then moving over to London.
Yeah.
So what made you make that jump from New Zealand over to the UK?
Yeah. So after Yellow Pages, they kind of started closing off some of their programs of work. And so I decided to stay in tech, and I moved to an organization called Flintbox, who are also a Microsoft partner. They have a like special IP around finance and integrating into Microsoft finance stack. And I worked there for probably about 4 years, and they had a number of clients in Europe and the UK that they wanted to serve, but they were trying to serve them out of New Zealand, which is obviously very expensive and the time zones don't match. And so they decided to open a branch in the UK, and they asked if anybody within the business wanted to kind of go over, and I raised my hand. I said, you know, I'd love to go to London. And yeah, they kind of sent me over on an overseas business representative, and I helped grow their business here in the UK. It was mostly focused on the delivery side of it, but also kind of helping grow their business as well. So came to London.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a big opportunity. So not many organizations kind of like to do that.
Yeah, it's really, they're interesting because they're quite a mature organization who has been established, I think, since the 80s, not necessarily within the Microsoft stack, but they still operate in a very kind of startup, where they did operate in a very startup fashion, which I actually think benefited me really well. It gave me the opportunity to not only focus on quality assurance, I then went into consulting, I then went into kind of pre-sales and strategy and directorship from there. So it was a really great opportunity for me to kind of move around and understand how organizations work more broadly, not just within the IT space. Yeah, it was an amazing opportunity, and one I'd say that probably kind of helped build my trajectory. A lot of really great people at Flintbox gave me really good opportunity to learn, and they made space for me, which I think was really nice.
Good. And so, and after that, you went and joined the big mothership, as it is.
I did. Yeah, I did. I grew with Flintbox really well, and I was there for about 7 years all up, and I had an amazing time. But I wanted to see what it was like to work at a really large organization. So I had a few, you know what it's, so I worked in business applications, and I know that, did you say you work, Andrew, in C365? Was that?
Oh, 365.
Oh, Office 365. Well, you know how, well, at least at the time, at least for business applications, the community is quite small, really, in the UK anyways. And so kind of everyone knows each other. And I had a few friends that I've worked with in the past that moved to Microsoft. And yeah, I applied and got some recommendations from the people that I worked with. And I started at Microsoft as a technical specialist, they called it, within business applications.
Yeah, so I mean, Microsoft is one of them places that, you know, we spoke to many guests on this podcast and said they've always had like nothing but positive words to say about it from what they offer their employees.
Just wait till I start. No, I'm just joking. I honestly, before going to a big corporate, I was well into the kind of startup lifestyle. I just like it. I like being able to do different things. And before I went in, I was really worried there was going to have to be a sense of me, what I called selling my soul. I know it sounds dramatic, but I really thought I was just going to kind of be a number and have to just fall in line, and I couldn't be myself. I wouldn't probably call myself kind of a typical corporate person, if that makes sense. I love sport. I like wearing tennis shoes. I'm not into the kind of what people kind of imagine in their brains as like a corporate person. But yeah, I loved it. There was, again, like there was just accepting of me as me, the benefits we got. I really felt like all my managers along the way cared for me as an individual. There's an element of kind of having to feed into that corporate lifestyle, particularly because I, even though I was a technology I moved into being a technology strategist from a specialist. And even though there's an element of sales in that, that you need to fall in line from a numbers perspective. I don't know. It's just an amazing place to have space to grow. There's so many different communities that exist within Microsoft that you can be a part of. And they measure your success in that way as well. They measure not just from a sales perspective, but how you contribute to communities within the organization and outside of the organization as well, which I think is anybody that wants to implement anything within their organization, they need to understand how to incentivize people to do it. And so, yeah, I loved Microsoft a lot.
And you went to another big corporation straight after that, to Avanade.
Yeah, I did. At Microsoft, it's kind of a little bit embarrassing to say. I kind of caught on to it quite late. But at Microsoft, you guys probably know this, there's a massive push towards sustainability. Microsoft being a sustainable organization, as well as making their clients more sustainable with the technology they use. And that just like really caught me, because when you ask the question, what did I want to be when I kind of grew up? Well, you know, what did I imagine myself to be? I think this kind of really caught my imagination, sustainability. And I didn't really think of it from a corporate sense before that time at Microsoft. And I just doubled down on it. Like, I'm currently getting my master's degree in corporate sustainability or business sustainability. And I really think it's going to be a powerful tool for us as a globe achieving kind of sustainability objectives. So from there, I love Microsoft, and I imagine maybe one day I'll go back to it. But I think for me right now, it was good to be able to talk about sustainability at Microsoft, but I wanted to do stuff. And as you know, Microsoft, they do kind of a selling, and then they hand off the partners to do the doing. And I wanted to be a part of like rolling my sleeves up, getting my hands dirty, and like sorting out these problems. So Avanade were hiring in sustainability. So I joined SWOG. Applied and interviewed, and yeah, that's why I went to Avanade.
So I'm a sustainability kind of novice as such, and in honesty, you say you I mean your work in sustainability does and stuff like that. I don't know what you would do day to day. It's kind of like my wife kind of saying, "What do you do?" And I'm trying to explain to her, and I don't quite understand. Doesn't quite understand what I do. She always says like. To friends, you know Chandler in Friends, when the whole group just don't know what he does, but he has this like it's like, so basically when you say you work in sustainability, it's kind of the same thing. I understand what sustainability is, but what's like, what would your kind of like general engagement be with a customer from like beginning to end, like really high level? Don't go too low level, but what's like
gives an elevator pitch. There we go.
An elevator pitch. Unfortunately, it's not that straightforward again, but I will go relatively quickly. It depends on what industry we're talking about, because the regulations vary. But at Avanade, what we try to do is we actually try to build sustainability into everything we do, even if it's not necessarily a sustainability issue. As an example, an organization wants to put in place an ERP, so an enterprise resource planning tool. So they want to put in D365. As a part of that, we as a sustainability team, we take a lens on what are some of the sustainability outcomes you can get just by putting this ERP in place. So that's one view that we take, where we try to build it into everything. Organizations use Azure. How can you be more sustainable in using the cloud? What can you be doing as an organization to optimize to drive a better outcome from a sustainability perspective? And then the other space that we really play in are in some sustainability specific opportunities and engagements. And this is where clients will have an issue. Oftentimes it's really, while there is a wider necessity to reduce carbon emissions, there's a lot of sustainability issues that are specific to industry. When you think of energy companies or utility companies, they'll care about energy, but they also care about things like water. How do they become more responsible with the way that they utilize, serve water? Financial services, they want to know about how do you kind of focus on creating a green portfolio, so making their portfolios greener. What data do they need? Manufacturing, again, big focus on energy. So really, it's kind of driven by industry because the problems vary, although the big problem right now is carbon emissions. So that's where we're spending a lot of our time. But it's expanding into things like biodiversity, water, waste, et cetera. Is that helpful? Kind of give you an insight of?
Yeah, it's amazing that a tech company is so invested into that, if you get what I mean. You'd thought there'd be like companies that specifically just do that, but a big tech company like Avanade being able to put that into everything they do is nearly everyone needs to be doing that at some type of level, don't they?
Yeah, and there are subject matter experts in this space and companies in this space that are so good, and they're amazing around strategy. But I think one of the underlying issues in sustainability, you know, outside of us changing the way that we do things, is data. And data is a tech problem. So how do we get data at the right time to be able to report on the right things? How do we share it? And so that is essentially a tech problem. And that's kind of how we've made it our business and why, you know, it should be something we're focusing on. So yeah, there are organizations out there that are amazing from a strategy perspective, but we oftentimes complement them from a technology and strategy perspective as well.
Yeah, sure. So my brain's still going around that everything kind of like day to day must be really different, if you get what I mean, for different companies, different type of strategies and different, must be a different day at work every day.
Yeah, it's really exciting, isn't it? Because it is one of those kind of horizontal style issues that it touches every industry. And because I have a kind of a specific industry background, which is because I've worked in manufacturing and resources and then construction, which are kind of key contributors to carbon emissions. So it's helpful. But we also have industry specialists internal at Avanade that we oftentimes kind of partner and buddy with to just make sure that when we are talking about sustainability, we're talking about business issues. And because often, as well, you can't just talk about risk. You have to talk about opportunity for businesses to really invest. Yeah. So that's another thing we focus on, is like, what is the opportunity in this space for you to improve yourself, customer loyalty, new revenue streams, et cetera.
So I'm guessing the carbon emission kind of thing, though, is obviously you're looking at how much travel you need to do to a customer site as well.
Yeah, so we do have ways and tools to measure the carbon emissions as it relates to our delivery. So we will make, so this is, if we win a project, we're delivering a project, what do our carbon emissions look like and how can we be more responsible partners to our clients? So we'll do things that will negate carbon emissions, essentially. So yeah, we do look at things like business travel. We also look at things like energy usage. We look at things of like, how do we ensure that the buildings that we're in, that we have our offices in, are smart, so they're using energy wisely. We're actually, I don't know if I can say this or not, but we're just making sure that the spaces we're working in are smart, using energy wisely. Lots of focus on circularity, so not just being wasteful with things. How can we introduce things back into the economy, like the circular economy, et cetera? So yeah, it's not just business travel, but it's certainly a focus, which is, I think, why a lot of people are working from home these days.
Yeah, so I remember when I was obviously at Avanade, I used to do a lot of traveling back in the day. I mean, I was traveling from the Midlands up to the north of Scotland for a customer.
Yeah.
So obviously that isn't a sustainable way of doing something.
Yeah, actually, our travel booking tool has carbon ratings against the way you decide to travel and what hotels you book, which is kind of cool. So it tells you what you should be doing from a sustainability perspective, which is really great. Because I know everybody wants to do their bit, but it can be a bit overwhelming to know where to start. And so it's just little things like that I think help you contribute and make a difference.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So, just want to take a bit of a different path of the podcast. I want to talk to you about football. So I know you and Andrew are kind of talking about it just off air as a joint kind of, but I also I read your LinkedIn post a couple of weeks ago, and it said wrapping up your 2022-23 football season. So what do you do outside of work in terms of that, the football and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I
now play... Andrew's getting interested.
Yeah. I love football, mate. I say, you know, being a football coach myself, it's nothing more than rewarding than seeing, you know, a bunch of kids that you've basically had from, you know, a particular age and then seeing them develop over the years.
I just love sport generally. I love every kind of sport, and I kind of don't really see it necessarily as something I do outside of work. It's very much a part of my life, and I make it so, if that makes sense. Like,
it takes over to some degree, doesn't it?
Yeah, because what I found is when I first started getting quite serious about my career, it was really kind of bleeding into other areas of my life, and I didn't like it. And so I committed myself to being really playing at like as high as I can at my age, football. So I play for a club in South London called Dulwich Hamlet. We're in tier four. So like any other men's teams would be getting paid. We play Fulham, we play M Suite. So we played QPR. So we play some pretty Wimbledon. We play some pretty big teams, and a lot of them get paid. Our club, unfortunately, right now don't get paid. But so I play football for a team in South London. We're in off season right now, which I'm very happy for. Take a little bit of a break, but we'll be starting back in July. So we get basically a month off and start back in July.
People understand what the tiers are. What is tier four?
Yeah, so tier four would, I guess, be three from the top. So similar to the men's structure. So they call it WSL. So they have Women's Premier League, they have Championship, three and four, five. You have National League in there as well. So football in America is great, but what I really love about football in the UK, especially for women, is that there's a proper grassroots, that if you don't go professional, there's a space for you to play in the UK. So yeah, Dulwich. So playing for Dulwich. Yeah, they're a pretty big club in London anyways.
Yeah, they're a big club. I'm from South London, so I know. So I know Dulwich pretty well. Like through the years, I had quite a few like friends and stuff that played for them throughout the years. But they're a massive club for the community as well, Dulwich Hamlet. A big club for the community. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what they're known for. I think it is the community. I know it exists a lot in German football because a lot of the clubs are like fan owned, aren't they? And so you get a lot of like the community sense, but at Dulwich it's the same. So we have a part ownership by the community trust, and we're a really progressive, club. And Millwall are kind of our rivals. And so we like are the antithesis to Millwall. Nothing against Millwall, but we're pretty much the antithesis to Millwall.
I'd really love them to kind of go up the leagues and stuff, Dulwich, but they just got relegated, didn't they?
Oh, so annoying. Yeah, we did really well. We had a pretty good season and they just got relegated. But I think it was a bit of I think after COVID, it's been really hard for National League sides to properly recover, because we are gate turnstile sales, and we didn't get a lot of help from the leagues. Certain clubs did and other clubs just didn't, and it really caused a big kind of separation between the top and kind of middle tiers, which is unfortunate, but hopefully it's a good rebuilding time for the men's side.
And that's one of the biggest bugbears that I have being a grassroots football coach, is there is so much money at the top of the pyramid, but there's nothing at the bottom. I mean, obviously I run an under-10s football team, and the company that's actually sponsored my team's kit this year or last year is a company in America. They have no inroads into the UK whatsoever. They're a company called Experts Exchange. So there's like a subscription-based company where people basically join to ask experts particular questions about a particular problem or issue. And that only came about because I featured on their podcast, and they're like, we'll sponsor. I was absolutely grateful, because it's so hard to get people to put the hand in the pocket just to give you, X amount of money to basically pay for kits for kids. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I'm having at the minute. I'm trying to find another new sponsor for this upcoming year, because we're moving from under 10s to under 11s. That jump is massive, because you're going from 7-a-side to 9-a-side. Yeah. So I've got more kids. I need bigger football goals, pop-up goals, bigger balls. Everything just increases, and it is hard work. And I have conversations with some ex-professionals, that I see on a regular basis. Cole Henry used to play for Wolves, played for QPR, and he basically works at a grassroots club not far from me.
Yeah.
So he's basically gone from the professional game, he's gone down to grassroots level, and he's actually coaching kids. And I watch how he like trains these kids. It's just unreal. He puts the same effort into what he did as a professional into grassroots, and he's got nothing but time for people. He's given me so much information, so much help. In just a short, brief conversation I've had with him, it's just helped me develop my team to, you know, what they are today.
Yeah, it is. You just need more people like that, I reckon. And it's unfortunate. I mean, as a woman as well, like not taking anything away from the kids, but as a woman as well, just the how underinvested the women's side. Like I said, I playing in tier four, men's teams in tier four getting paid, you know, a lot of money, and it just doesn't exist. And it is amazing how much the Premier League, like, I love football. I watch Premier League football. I'm not trying to take a stance against it, but it is amazing how much money sits within those. You know, Manchester United only had a women's team. When did it start? Like 3 years ago, 4 years?
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
When it first had a women's side. And that's criminal. It's criminal. So, and I agree. I think the FA are trying from a grassroots perspective, but I just still think it's kind of, I guess, does your team sit outside of the FA network, I suppose, and it's just kind of a local, or is it in some way, if it's, I kind of don't know how it works, in some way does it need to align to the FA a bit, no matter?
We're aligned to the Staffordshire FA, because right, yeah, each so region has its own different, obviously, FA, that yeah, actually brings the main FA.
Yeah, yeah.
So the one thing I did see recently, obviously in women's football, and because, you know, there is obviously that big gap of money between the men's game and the women's game, that Reading recently have basically turned all their female professionals into part-time contracts. Because they're not getting that funding, yeah. And the gate sales for, you know, support team.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's hard, because people said, well, if you don't make any money, how do you expect to have any money? But the other thing is, like, if you don't invest in it, why would people come, right? If you don't have, because yeah. You have the Arsenals, the Cities, the Manchester United, the Chelsea's top teams, and then everybody else is kind of clumped together, and they need investment too. That's what makes it exciting. That's what makes it competitive, and that's what people want to watch. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. But if you don't invest in it, then why would, if it doesn't get better, why would necessarily people come, I guess? So it does need massive investment. And
it's getting more, you know, spotlight on it. Obviously, you got the Women's World Cup coming up soon. You're getting, you know, games now actually being played in full stadiums. Obviously, the Emirates had actually a packed out stand ground
there.
So, you know, it's coming, but it's same. Obviously, you know, in our field of expertise, there is that gulf between male and female in certain parts, and it's trying to basically address that.
Yeah.
I think it's also about getting people who are football fans actually invested in the women's game as well. Like for me, for example, I'm a big Arsenal supporter. I go to as many games as I can. Used to be a season ticket holder and stuff. And like getting people like me more interested in the women's side, which I am. Like I followed the Arsenal women's team and stuff like that. Really, I think we've been unlucky this season.
Yeah.
Too many injuries. So we have four players with ACL injuries. That's ridiculous. Getting us interested and stuff like that. And I think like the Arsenal Wolfsburg game, as you said, like 60,000 people there, which is amazing. But it can't just be a one off. It has to be a bit more like consistent throughout the year.
Yeah, and I know that people travel to go to the Emirates, obviously, but like, why is Arsenal women's team playing at Boreham Wood, which is a pain to get to? It's not even in London, really. It's ages to get to. They're at weird times. So, like, this kickoff at 8, so you're not home until really late. And so, yeah. I think it's just things like making it accessible, reducing the barrier to entry. That doesn't cost that much, especially if you're selling out Emirates, right? Like, you're recovering your costs. So, it's just one of the – and what I think is really underinvested in is – and I've seen a few numbers, but properly looking at the market opportunity, like you said, John, like what, because it's the men's football is saturated. What's the market opportunity in the women's side? And then you build your investment case for it. Like what fans can we bring over to the women's side? And I think it helps by just reducing the barrier to entry, bringing people, getting into those central locations and in the stadiums and stuff. So
I've looked into Boreham, and it's just here's a bit of it's a nightmare to go to. But then I think Arsenal and I said Vinaid, who's the chief executive or something like that, for the person who runs the football side over at Arsenal, his plan is to kind of build that up, and they've got like a good long sustainable plan to do that. But I don't think they could do the Emirates every time, because the policing, they couldn't do 60,000 the whole time as well. I think they've had to limit down to like 20,000, 30,000, just because of the policing demands as well, which is just something outside the control of a football club. Anyway, we are a tech...
I was on the phone, one last thing. If it ever actually looked, how much it cost for a season ticket for a women's game?
Pardon?
Have you ever looked how much it cost for a season ticket for a women's game?
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's so cheap. I mean, if you want to obviously try and get children into football, get interest in football, you know, I'm looking at the Villa season tickets for last year. For £109, you got an adult and under 14 for the whole entire season. And if you look at, you know, what you would pay for the men's game, it's 500-600 times that.
Do you know what? I was looking into a season ticket that for the women's team, and it actually made sense. I could just, like, get a season ticket and then just turn up whenever I want, and it's still cheaper than probably two games for the men, so.
It's good in that sense, and that's why I kind of think in the women's games, which is interesting when you talk about policing, because the women's games, the fan base is different. It's just a different demographic. And because I think it is for families from a price perspective, it's more cost effective. So if it is a bit of a different demographic, like, don't get me wrong, I love the Arsenal Ultras. What are they called? Ashford. It's really fun. But then the policing needs as well kind of change a little bit too, don't they? So anyways, it's
Ashburton Army. That's it.
Ashburton Army. Yeah. Big up women's football. That's all I have to say.
The police is more crowd control more than anything anyway. Yeah, exactly. So like rather than trying to put up with violence, but it's more crowd control. But as you said, I was gonna bring it up actually. It's just like the crowd at a women's game is so much better.
For family,
so much better.
Yeah.
Like you can go there and be safe in your mind that your kid's okay. I remember going to Old Trafford it must have been 2003, 2001, 2003, like, so 20 years ago, and it's unsafe for me to be there. Like, I like adults like trying to start trouble, like when I was 10 years old with my dad, and like it's so bad. And you just don't get that at the at a women's game. You don't get it. You can get fans to be like together, sitting together as well, and it's fine. Whereas if you look at the women's like Euros that just went in the summer, I think you had like different nationalities all sitting next to each other, and there was no issues whatsoever. But you get someone in the wrong end at a men's game, and it's people are just pelting them and stuff like that. It's terrible. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Like this tribalism within men's game. The men's game is just stupid. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
I couldn't agree more. But it's very interesting. I sometimes wonder in those situations, like, don't you have to go to work on Monday? Is this really worth it, what you're doing? I'm just curious. Yeah. but anyways.
Do you know what, though? Like, I've spent 5 minutes talking about Harry Potter in this podcast before, and Andrew tries to move us on, but we talk about football. It's been 15 minutes. He's okay.
It's fine with the topic now, John. We can talk about it for another 15 minutes.
Anything you want to go for, Andrew, or so?
No, obviously, we spoke a lot about, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, it's all about talking about diversity as well. So, yes, obviously, while we spoke about football, it is a diversity conversation, that equality, because, you know, it's getting more people involved and making it an equal platform for everyone. So that's what we're about.
Yeah, Avanade has done a really good job. I think we're quite high, and I should know the numbers better. But Avanade, we obviously have a female CEO, but Avanade have made a really conscious effort around diversity and inclusion, particularly in making sure there are more positions, particularly positions of management for women. But also, when one of the first things I noticed when I did go to the office is how diverse it actually is in age and race and gender. I was really, and Microsoft's a good place, but then going to Avanade, I was like, wow, I was just really impressed. And yeah, Avanade do a really good job from that perspective.
I'm just surprised how big the company is, how small the office actually is.
How small the office is compared to how big we are?
Yeah. Hammond Street's tiny compared to how many people actually work for Avanade.
There are some changes happening. I'm not quite sure if I can say it or not, but there are some changes happening. But there's also regional offices. So we have like a Manchester office. I think we have somewhere in Scotland. I can't really, maybe Edinburgh.
And one in Newcastle as well.
Yeah, we have a whole kind of team in Newcastle. They're called like Newcastle Technology Centre.
They're doing all the fast track stuff for Microsoft.
Yeah. Oh, do they? I didn't know that. Yeah. So some changes afoot. But I think, again, after kind of COVID, but then also probably the majority of the people are client-based. So they'll go onto client site as opposed to necessarily in the office. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're coming towards the usual ending time, John, of our episode.
Yes. So, I don't need to finish off with like two questions, but I have been recently. I didn't know the last one because we ran out of time in the last one because I was really late. But two questions. First one, so could you give us an example period of time in or an event that's happened within your career, which is like a really kind of bad experience, and kind of what happened and how did you kind of most importantly overcome it?
No, that's a nice question.
The next one's nice. So there's two parts, so the second part's nice, so don't worry.
It is a good question. It's good to even though it's tough, it's good to reflect on these things, because I don't think we do it enough to kind of reflect on these types of situations we go through. But I think one was probably when I there's probably a number of different things that fed into it, but when I first kind of came to the UK, we were working on a really big deal. When I was at Flintbox, we were working on a really, really big deal. And from kind of a functional perspective, we were the most perfect fit for this particular opportunity. And I just wasn't kind of aware of the SI, so system integrator politics that went on, because there were a number of different very big, so Microsoft was involved and other big SIs, which I won't name, were involved, and how difficult the political landscape was. And I was extremely naive at that time. And I wouldn't say anything terrible happened, but the client also wasn't very nice to us. And it was just a really, really tough period of time. It was like 3 weeks of extremely late nights trying to put together this proposal, work out the politics, working with Microsoft. The feedback from the client was extremely harsh. But they're basically just like, you don't have your shit together. What are you doing? You don't know what you're talking about, even though I was completely convinced we did. It was also like 40 degrees Celsius in London and the tubes were down. And so I had to walk with my head down after pure dejection from one of the clients. And so it was just kind of a really bad period of time for me, just kind of really realizing how naive I was in this kind of space, and coming to the UK as someone new who's like bright eyed and ready to go. And yeah, it was quite upsetting, and I felt really dejected during that time. So I didn't want to go into too much detail because it would name clients and other system integrators, but that's kind of the situation.
Cool. And the second part was like, name me like the highlight of your career so far. And just what's the highlight?
I think the highlight for me, even though it's been an element of taking risk and also a level of dejection, is going into sustainability, kind of doubling down in that space and really finding something that is so meaningful to me, that makes me, because again, I love Microsoft, but do I care that much about making them loads of money on a solution? Not exactly. I just really love helping people. I love strategy. And I think going into the sustainability space has really allowed me to find something that's extremely meaningful to me and what I want to do, like to add value back to not just tech, but kind of to the world. I know it seems grandiose, but, you know, just something that's really meaningful to me. And it helps. So that's probably been the highlight. And it's taken some risk because I'm on working visas. And so I quit Microsoft, a really big, comfortable, lovely job, to move to this space that I didn't really know very well. But for me, it's been extremely rewarding and happy.
Awesome. That's sad. It's good to, as I've said many times in the podcast, and I think I said it in the last episode, the most important thing about work is enjoying it and feeling like you're contributing something. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Being valued is obviously the biggest thing as well.
Yeah. Being in a place where, again, I feel like I can express kind of who I am through sustainability and otherwise, and feeling like there's a place where the organization value that is really meaningful. It's just kind of special. You know, not everybody gets sustainability, and that is one frustrating thing about it. Not all businesses, and I don't mean like understand the science. I mean like, why would we do this? Is what people say sometimes, and that's frustrating, which I can imagine what scientists have been feeling like for like the last 30 years. Like, we've been trying to tell you, and me just having to deal with, you know, a few months of it is nothing compared to that. So yeah, it is really rewarding.
Awesome. Andrew, anything else before we...
No, all good from my point.
Awesome. Cool. Anyway, thanks, Britt, for joining us today. It's been an insightful episode talking about all things.
So, and support the women's game.
Exactly. Yeah. Support women's football, support grassroots. Thank you for the opportunity. It was really nice. I love when my worlds collide and I get to talk about sustainability, tech, and football. Like, nothing is better than exactly. That, really.
We're here. We do everything here, you know.
Yes, it
covers all bases.
Why put ourselves in a box? Let's explore it.
That's why I asked the question at the end of the day. I know we are the kind of a tech podcast, but all our guests, we're all from tech. Like,
I'll say we're a people podcast.
We're a people podcast. Like, understand a person and talk about topics that we enjoy. Maybe the listeners doesn't know anything about women's football.
This is it. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
Nice to meet you both.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFTSpotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight Podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. Migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.